Hello and welcome back to Holistic Pet Radio. I'm Amanda. I'm passionate about helping people make better choices for their pets. I blog weekly at holisticpetradio.ca. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all under the Holistic Pet Radio name. Also, be sure to search for our wellness group, Holistic Pet Parents, on Facebook. For anyone who doesn't know, I do also own a natural pet food store called The Bone and Biscuit, which is located in Leduc, Alberta. If you are not in the Edmonton area and you can't come visit our retail store, I do offer Skype consultations for pet parents around the world as well. You just go to the services tab on holisticpetradio.ca for more information. Also, I am co-hosting another Facebook Live on April 29th at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. It's all about holistic pet care, everything from titer testing to natural flea and tick prevention, and then obviously feeding whole fresh foods. So if you have a question that you do want answered, just shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram and we can include it in the video. So on to today's topic, which is why are vets scared of raw food? This, as promised, is the continuation from last week's episode, which was called How to Talk to Your Vet. And I just want to talk very specifically about raw feeding and some of the common concerns that we hear, because I think it's really useful and important to understand why so many veterinarians are honestly afraid of raw feeding. They fearmonger about it. They tell you that there's a lot of different issues. And I think that if we can understand their fears and their concerns, we can begin to prove that we're responsible raw feeders. We're feeding balanced meals to our pets and we're not putting our animals at risk. Realistically, vets tend to see the worst case scenarios. Healthy, raw-fed dogs are not the ones coming into their clinics all the time. Dogs being fed unbalanced foods and inappropriate-sized bones are. They're the ones they see all the time. So let's talk about some common concerns that vets will bring up about raw feeding and what you can say to show that you are an educated pet parent who is not putting your animal at risk. Quick note, this podcast topic was actually inspired by Dr. Karen Becker's 2015 Raw Roundup talk called Why Most Vets Fear Raw Food and What You Can Do About It. Balance. So the fear of unbalanced food is probably the number one concern that veterinarians have, and rightly so. The raw food industry is completely unregulated in Canada, which is a little crazy, but it's also good because regulatory boards have their own set of issues and meeting certain set of standards like AFCO for raw don't always mission match very well. However, unbalanced raw food can and does cause severe musculoskeletal issues, vitamin and mineral deficiencies, and endocrine damage, just to name a couple things. It has a ton of different issues. And dietary imbalances can show up within 6 months in adult dogs and within just a few weeks for puppies and kittens. Pregnant and lactating dogs and cats can also pass deficiencies on to their litters. If you are just feeding chicken necks or ground beef to your carnivore, your vet has absolutely every right to be concerned for your pet's welfare. Unfortunately, vets will see the raw feeding gone wrong dogs or the gulper dogs who've been given whole fryer hens and they choked on it or damaged their esophagus. It is our job to ensure that we are responsible pet owners who are feeding our pets a varied and balanced diet. So it is a good idea when you go into your vet to bring a written copy of what you're feeding your pet, whether that's written amounts of your DIY food or a picture of the guaranteed analysis on your raw. That way they kind of know what you're feeding and you can show them that it's varied, that you've done the research and that it's a balanced diet. And it's also not a bad idea to do some research on micro and macronutrients and to check out the NRC, the National Research Council's guidelines for minimum requirements. In the wild, wolves have been documented with up to 38 different foods in their stomach at one time. So my point with that is that variety is essential to balance. So you want to make sure you're feeding a minimum of 5 different proteins and 5 different organs, and then you want a minimum 50-50 split of red meats and white meats. And then if your pet does have sensitivities or allergies that prevent you from feeding a larger variety, you want to make sure you're working with a veterinary nutritionist to ensure that you're meeting minimum nutrient requirements. And all of that together is just to say that balance comes with variety and you want to be aware of balance. When your vet asks, is your food balanced? You need to be able to tell them exactly how you're balancing it over time or in each meal, whatever you're doing, so you can assuage their concerns and show that you have done your research and you know what you're doing and you are not harming your pet. The next major concern that many veterinarians have surrounds bacteria and parasites. So I have a few general points before we get into any specifics about certain bacteria or certain parasites. Number one, the discussion of whether or not it is safe for you and your family members to handle raw meat or have it in your house at all is one that you need to have with your medical practitioner, so your doctor, and not your veterinarian. It's not their job to give you medical advice and you don't need to take it from them, in my opinion. It is a huge pet peeve of mine when people are like, oh, my vet said I shouldn't handle raw meat. If your doctor has advised you against handling any raw meat, so do not bring home raw meat from the grocery store, don't handle it, don't cook it, blah, 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 for whatever reason, then you can consider talking about sterile raw foods with your doctor and figure out if that's something you could do, like HPP foods that are technically called sterile raws. I know that people have mixed opinions about HPP and sterile raws, but I think they're a good starting point for people who for some reason can't handle raw meat in any form, and for people who are afraid of it, because I get it. There's so much fear-mongering going on around raw food that if you are too scared that you're going to kill your dog and that's what's stopping you from making that jump into raw food, start with an HPP raw and go from there. That's totally fine. You're getting at least not cooked, like beyond belief, food into your pet. That's awesome. It's better than nothing, in my opinion. Obviously, everyone has different opinions. The other point I wanted to bring up, and this is kind of a silly point, but it's also very, very true. Our pets, our dogs and cats, they are meant to eat raw meat. Their systems are meant to handle bacteria. Their digestive system is amazing at handling bacteria that would cause severe harm to people. They sniff each other's butts and they eat poop on the daily, and they are not sick from it. If we did that, we would be extremely, extremely sick and disgusting, but very sick. They do it just fine, and there's a reason for it. That's why they can handle bacteria. Their system is meant to handle it. However, as I said, our system can't handle it. So for the safety of yourself and your family members, you absolutely do want to be using food safe handling practices when you're feeding your pets raw food and feeding kibble and feeding canned, because all of these things are recalled for contaminations all of the time. Kibble and canned especially. I mean, obviously, I'm going to talk about all the raw food recalls at the end because I have some, I think, interesting perspectives on it. But kibble has been recalled for Salmonella, Listeria, and E. coli many, many times over the past however many years. So you absolutely want to use food safe handling practices. So what does that mean? Washing your hands after handling any of their food, whether it's raw meat, kibble, whatever, and disinfecting all surfaces and points of contact, which is something I don't think everyone does after feeding kibble. You should be washing your hands, washing your countertops, washing anything that comes in contact with it, with anything. And then you also want to be cleaning their dishes regularly, ideally after each meal, but I mean, that's not realistic for everyone. I get that. I don't do it, but I mean, you can, absolutely, that's awesome. You also want to be focusing on keeping small children away from your pet's food dishes and away from their food itself. And you also do not want to let small children obviously handle their food, even their kibble. Don't let kids feed your dogs kibble. So if you're a free feeder, keep the bowls in a non-accessible position. Not only obviously is it a choking hazard, it's a bacterial contamination concern if they're feeding kibble. Absolutely, kids shouldn't be touching it because they don't know they're going to touch it and then they're potentially going to put their hands in their eyes or their mouth. And all of that is contamination risk, absolutely. However, I do think it's really important to keep bacterial contamination things in perspective. So the CDC reported that, which is the Center for Disease Control, reported that between 2009 and 2010, 23 people were killed by Listeria, Salmonella, and E. coli combined. To put that in a little bit of perspective, NBC News reported that in 2013, a record low of 23 people were killed by lightning. So you're about equivalent chances of getting sick from Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli and dying, or getting hit by lightning. So let's just keep it in perspective. It is something to be aware of and to use food safe handling practices, absolutely. But it is not inherently like the most dangerous thing you're ever going to do in your life. Okay? Just wanted to make that point. Also, another really interesting note, and I always bring this up with people and they find it very interesting, generally speaking. Many commercially prepared raw foods that contain human-grade meats are actually inspected more intensively than meats found at the grocery store. So what do I mean? The meat is inspected before leaving the slaughter facility. So the meat that's going to become the raw meat for your pet food leaves the slaughter facility. It's inspected by a certified meat inspector. And then at the raw food facility, it'll generally be bacteria batch tested. So it's inspected twice, whereas meat at our grocery store is only inspected once. All right, let's move on to some more specifics. So I'm going to start with Salmonella here, because that is a very, very, very common one that I hear people always worried about. So Salmonella can actually be isolated from up to 36% of healthy dogs and 18% of healthy cats, regardless of what they consume. Whether they're eating kibble, raw food, whatever, you can find Salmonella in their fecal material and in their gastrointestinal tract, regardless of what they eat. Dogs and cats naturally have Salmonella in their GI tract, and they can shed it in their feces regardless of what food they eat, which is why we should always wash our hands well after handling their poop. However, I think it's very important to note with all of that that raw-fed dogs have not been shown to have higher amounts of salmonella in their feces. To date, there is absolutely no known incidence of humans being infected with salmonella by a raw-fed dog or cat. So you can assure your vet that you are washing your hands thoroughly, as well as any surfaces or dishes that have come into contact with your pet's raw food, and then you move on. Now, that being said, if you do have a pet who is severely immunocompromised, like from something from chemotherapy or anything like that, you can always discuss HPP sterile raw with your vet. Some vets aren't even aware that it's a thing, and some don't really understand it, so I think having that conversation can also be really beneficial. And again, if you are severely immunocompromised, you want to talk about it with your doctor and see what their recommendation is. Trichinosis is the next one I want to talk about. This is one I get questions about as well. It is a parasitic disease caused by eating infected raw or undercooked wild game or pig. Pig, pork is usually the concern that I hear, but game as well is something else to consider. So the game meats of concern are wild boar, bear, and fox are the primary concerns. The larvae, though, can be, trichinosis larvae can be inactivated by heating, freezing, using HPP, or irradiation. So all you need to do is assure your veterinarian that you are freezing wild game for 3 weeks before feeding it to your pet, and then you move on. It's not a huge deal. And then also if they say, well, I've heard trichinosis isn't inactivated by freezing, yes, there is an Arctic species of trichinosis that is not killed by freezing. So all you have to do is not feed your pet polar bears, Arctic foxes, or walruses. Toxoplasmosis. This is one that you may have heard of if you have ever been pregnant or known someone who is pregnant who has cats, because the big concern here is cat litter for the most part. Toxoplasmosis is a parasitic-based disease, and it can infect most mammals. It's, like I said, is not of major concern to most people except for pregnant women and those with compromised immune systems. The oocysts of toxoplasmosis are killed by cooking, HPP, or freezing meat for 24 hours. So all you need to do when you're having that discussion with your vet is to reassure them that you are freezing your pet's meat for at least 24 hours before feeding, and then you move on from it. Lastly, I want to touch on GI parasites, because GI parasites are of some concern. Some people seem to think you need to deworm more frequently, or that parasites are of higher concern when feeding raw food. Now, we're talking about GI specific parasites. So GI parasites are, not surprisingly, found in the gastrointestinal tract of the animals, of all animals, including the prey that you may be feeding to your pet. So your solution is not to feed guts to your pets. Most people don't. Commercially prepared raw foods generally don't contain any sort of guts or entrails. Those have been removed. However, if you're a hardcore raw feeder and you're feeding whole animals, whole prey, like rabbits or birds or something like that, without breaking them down or disemboweling, all you need to do is take a fecal sample to your vet twice a year, and then you deworm naturally as needed for what comes back in your fecal. Lastly, I just want to touch really quickly on what's up with all the raw food recalls lately, because if you have been around the internet at all in 2018 especially, you will have noticed that there have been a ton of raw food recalls lately. And I think there are a couple different reasons for this. Number one, I do think that it is a last-ditch effort of the processed kibble industry to kind of get people away from raw food, because they know people are moving towards raw feeding. We're going to make it scarier and make people afraid to get into it, because I do know that in 2015, I believe it was, Dr. Karen Becker and Rodney Hibib went to a meeting with AFCO, and they were bringing up the fact that there are very, very few recalls on raw food. And they were talking to the FDA as well, I believe. And basically they were told straight up, like, that's going to change. Don't worry. We're going to get to that. Because the point was, well, if raw food's so bad and scary, why have there been no recalls on raw food? And unfortunately, when you bring up points like that, people go, oh, well, fine, we'll make recalls for you. And I think that looking at the way that they're testing for these foods is really important, because what they use to test, the tests are so sensitive to check for pathogens that they will actually find dead pathogens in very, very low amounts. The FDA has actually set a standard of zero tolerance for pathogens like Salmonella, Listeria, and E. coli, which I think kind of unfairly is actually a stricter standard than the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, sets for human food and for kibble. They don't set it for kibble, but the FDA doesn't have that standard for kibble is what I'm trying to say. Zero tolerance. There can be no Salmonella, Listeria, or E. coli in the food, which, I mean, in passing sounds realistic, but you're allowed it. And there's a certain allowance in human food. So why can our pets have none? Remember, they sniff butts and eat poop. I honestly think all of these recalls are going to pass and we're going to move forward. And I think that I know that the pet food industry is changing. It is. The raw food industry is growing all the time. People are realizing how great it is to feed your pets raw. And I'm not, like, everyone who knows me knows that I am not in any way trying to single anyone out. If you still feed kibble, that is fine. If you're including some raw in their diet, that is awesome. But I'm kind of talking specifically about raw here, so don't feel left out. I still love you, and I know that people do the best for their pets with what they can in their certain situations. So if you can't afford to feed raw right now, if you're only doing it once a week, that is totally fine. I still love you. It's all good. But for the raw feeders out there, don't be afraid by all of this stuff going on in the media. I do think it's going to pass. And yeah, that's kind of what I had to say about that. I really do think it's a passing thing. There are a ton of recalls going on right now. And I think we're only going to see more in the next little bit. But I do think that it's going to fade. So hopefully you guys found this helpful. I wanted to leave you with a quote from Gandhi that says, "First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win." Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to see all the exclusive content we post over there. And don't forget to look up Holistic Pet Parents on Facebook. Disclaimer, the contents of this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for professional veterinary advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your veterinarian with any questions you may have regarding the medical condition of your pet. Never disregard professional advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.